I think that love as an emotion isn't about finding the one. It's more about finding love, period.
Yeah, it was a good book. I liked it. There's no way Hans actually wrote it.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. All right, salutations, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio. You can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we welcome back author Hans Hershey to the show to give us a scoop on his latest book, Returning to the Land of the Morning Calm, which releases today. Hans will join us on the second half of the show. Make sure to stay tuned for that because I love Hans. He's amazingly funny and witty.
And he's just going to tear me apart.
We look forward to it. We encourage it. We welcome it.
Thank you. And and you guys know, my name is Tom, and I'm one of the hosts on the show. And as always, you've got two crazy, amazing, beautiful creatures sitting next to me, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
Texting bitch.
Good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
I sort of kind of threw him a curveball.
Yeah, I was like, you're going to introduce me?
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Well, you know, last week was a crazy week, to say the least. I could barely get through the podcast without breathing.
Oh, my God. I forgot you were dying.
I was literally like death on a stick. But you know what? I'm really proud of my friends that are sitting here on this table. They're so selfless, and I love them for it because they help me get rid of shit and take it upon themselves. So, Trish, thank you for taking whatever it was that I had.
And you gave it right to me?
And it's all yours.
She shared the love, girl.
Of course, you know.
I'll be the coffer today.
Yeah, you know, it's a very selfless thing that you did, and I'm very, very, very appreciative.
Keep in mind, I'm face-tuning right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You should face-tune your throat. But anyway. That was mean. Sorry.
She's nasty.
I sort of kind of hit myself on that one. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be nice. A great show. I'm excited. Hans is always great to have on the show because he's just, again, as I said, witty and crazy. And the last time we did a show, I sort of kind of like forgot to hit record for like the whole first half of the show.
Hashtag remember Tucson.
Mm-hmm. Right now. How is it that Trish says it?
Tuscan.
I said that one time.
Mm-hmm. That's all it takes, girl.
And we're
that's
never
capital of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Tuscan, you know.
Yeah. You know, that's
difficulties.
Exactly.
What was the one that I couldn't get last week? There was one. It was definitely me.
What was it? Stop face tuning.
Shit. I can't. It was such an easy one. I was reading it letter for letter, and I didn't think. I just read.
It was
read.
Something, it had to do with something sitting, or I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. Someone, oh yeah, I'll figure it out later.
Anyway, when we get drunk, we'll probably figure it out.
That's right. Speaking in cursive, and it's effing elegant. Is that better? Yeah, I want to put it out there. Mom, if you're listening, please don't. Please stop listening. Thank you, Mom.
We encourage that you do.
She called me. I was working a double on Friday, and I get a phone call. My mother was calling to check on how my grades were for the end of the semester. And she's like, oh, I finally got an iPhone. I'm like, all right, great. So then I kept trying to talk, and she's like, so I can listen to your podcast. I was like, what did you just say? She's like, oh, I listened to some of your podcasts. I was like, you said what?
Mom, like, Mom, episode five. Episode
no, shut
five.
Up. Please, for the love of
it's
God,
not
no.
It's not available on iTunes anymore.
She's like, you swear too much, Christopher. I was like, well, just please stop listening.
That's
for the love
the normal
of God.
Thing. Think about it when you were like, you know, in your 20s. You probably swore too when you weren't around your parents.
Nah, not my mom. She didn't even smoke pot.
Listen, my mother never touched a joint in her life, but she has the mouth of a trucker. And I know she did when she was young. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. She's had chased after three little Latin boys, one of them in drag. And go to town.
That one was her son.
That was me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I used to like wear these little mud masks and be like running around like, yay, I'm going to be pretty when I'm done. But, you know, it's done. But anyway, so why don't we jump into our show? Because we do have a guest coming on and we need to be on point because he is calling us from the other side of the globe. And so when we do finally get to him at 7:10-ish, it'll be like 2 o'clock in the morning over there.
Yeah, that's a loyal fucking guest.
Every yeah, he's time. Amazing. He's amazing.
Sorry, Mom, I'm just going to swear. Yeah, that's a loyal fucking guest, you know, coming on mm-hmm. at that hour always, taking his somewhat, attempting to take beauty sleep. Is that what we figured out, Nick?
Yeah,
attempting.
Attempting, yeah.
Attempting. We will
attempting.
Find out.
And mm-hmm. what was it that you said to him on the...
On Instagram?
Yeah.
Should we just... We'll talk about it later.
All right. So anyway, let's jump into our cocktail because it is very delicious. So, Christopher?
Yes. This was actually Trisha's pick. It was really good. We're going because of the... With the book that Hans wrote, part of the book takes place in Korea.
Uh-huh.
So we wanted to go with a Korean-themed cocktail. So today, our signature cocktail is the Seoul Mule.
Mm.
Everybody loves a mule. So
it's
we're gonna,
so good.
It's... Freaking delicious.
It
I
is.
Absolutely love it.
And we actually made them. It's not vodka soda.
Yeah, it really is. What?
Because you're not in school anymore.
Exactly. I said, give me a little time. Let me get back. So we're actually having the cocktail that we say we're having today. Courtesy of Namageddon.com.
Uh-huh.
This cocktail consists of 2 ounces.
Namageddon?
Namageddon.
Ooh.
Namageddon. Get your noms, noms.
Right. Yum, yum.
This recommends 2 ounces of ginger-infused soju. And if you go on their website, it'll teach you how to infuse the soju, which is it's like Korean sake or Korean vodka. It's like the liquor, the rice wine of Korea. It's phenomenal. Drank a ton of it when I was studying with my Korean friends in Germany.
I'm sure.
So, You
that's
infuse...
not the only thing you drunk a ton of, but go
I
ahead.
Drunk a ton of.
Mm-hmm. It's
excellent.
Okay.
So again, 2 ounces of ginger infused soju, 1 ounce yuzu juice. If you can't find that, we're using lemon juice. You probably have to go to a Korean market or some kind of Asian market to actually get your hands on that. 3 to 4 ounces alcoholic ginger beer. I recommend Krabby's ginger beer. It's very good. Ice. You know, mix that up, and then you could garnish it with candied ginger.
And it's not the Krabbies, and you know, like that you get.
No, it's not.
Not those kind of Krabbies.
Not those ones. This one's alcoholic.
Okay.
And that is your Seoul Mule. It's got ginger in it, 2 times, so it's nutritious. It's healthy.
It's good for your stomach.
Exactly. It's there it is.
So I do want to point out there, though, although that if you sleep with any of us.
What?
We drink so much alcohol that our Krabbies might be drunk anyway, so you won't know the difference. But go ahead.
Valid. I was done. I was done. That was a public service announcement from Tom. Thank you very much.
Before we jump into the show, can I tell a little story about this weekend?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm on Tinder. Hello, Tinder.
Swipe right, ladies and gentlemen. Right all the time.
No, swipe left. Don't. Like we were saying earlier,
she's
there's nobody on, there's nobody, there's no lifeguard on duty. Date at your own risk.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a list of people I've dated before and their numbers for support. So I was talking, to this guy and he was like, even though I was a late starter who had only been with girls, I still feel like mainly a bottom. And so my response was, uh-oh, friends? ?
You're a mess.
And he goes, LOL, you too? I was like, oh, yeah. And then he was like, frustrating revelation sometimes. I was like, it's all good. Who knows?
Well, I would have replied, though. It's like, you're not a bottom. You're the bottom. There's a difference.
Well, it's true.
And after Dr. Goldstein is done with you, you're going to be like the absolute ultimate bottom.
Well, according to Dr. Goldstein, we don't know if he's as good of a bottom as he says.
Exactly.
Or he claims to be.
Yeah.
So
we need an examination.
She might just become a very flamboyant top.
I want a declaration.
A declaration.
I want it all.
I just
on
couldn't
paper.
Believe. Like, he said that to me, and I was just like, friends? ? Why? He's like, age appropriate, very good looking, like, got a good career going on, local. And I'm like, God damn it.
You're going to be fighting over the dildo.
I can only do a double sided dildo, you know, so much.
Is he local?
Local enough.
But you're not totally bottom. I mean, you've topped before, and you're...
Yeah.
The thought of that is just...
Disgusting, isn't it?
I don't want to use the word disgusting. It's
Like, I can't picture it.
Yes,
it's
really?
Like, it's more, you know...
I picture Trish, like, pounding, right? Like, you see it, but I see the wig doing this.
Okay. And the Bondo's peeling off and everything.
Yeah, no, she's sweating the Bondo off. So next thing you know, it's like you see drip, drop, white sheet.
Trish droppings.
Polka dots all over the place.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a great time.
Guys.
Yes.
Guys.
Yes.
Guys.
Yes.
I'm 30.
Proud of you. And she looks fierce.
And I've had plenty of experiences. It's not like a fish out of water, okay? I can handle myself.
Honey, at least the fish out of water won't have runny makeup. I love you, though. Anyway, so we've got so much stuff to talk about, and I wanted to just throw it out there. The big event of the weekend, of course, on Saturday was the royal wedding between Meghan Markle and, of course, my ginger, who is no longer my ginger. Fuck her. You know, Prince Harry. I was just... Anyway, the event was...
I'm just laughing at you. Go on.
So anyway, there was a lot of things that happened during this wedding that were very, very out of the norm for the royal family. They were very controversial or very in your face, if you want to think about it. But that's exactly what was amazing about the wedding, because when you think about what happened throughout this whole, you know, courtship between Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, it's very unique, right? Because
and it was a blind date.
It was a blind date.
That's nuts.
And now she is a duchess. She is the Duchess of Sussex. Amazing.
How does a prince go on a blind date?
Well, they got set up on a blind date with a mutual friend, and they met, and then like 2 weeks later, they were free in Africa, like. Going to like this remote place where they just like completely like had this amazing moment and they fell in love, and here we are almost a year and a half later and they got married, and now she is part of the royal family, and this is very, very historic, and there's a lot of reasons why. Because if we go back just a little bit in history, think about, I would probably say like 70 plus years. You know, you have to think about that. The reason why Queen Elizabeth II herself is the monarch of Britain is because her uncle abdicated the throne to marry, so that he would be able to marry the woman who he loved, which was an American actress who was twice divorced, which the country or the parliament or the prime minister or anyone at that time was refusing to give him permission to marry this woman that he loved and bring her into the royal family. So he abdicated his throne to be able to marry the woman that he loved. Right? Amazing love story. Awesome.
And that's how she became queen.
And so, no, that's how her father ended up becoming king. You know, and then speaking of the brother of her uncle, though, he ended up becoming a Nazi sympathizer and blah, blah, blah. So history will always know them for being who they were. But, you know, when her father ascended to the throne, you know, she was never supposed to be queen, but she ended up being queen. When he died, she got crowned. She was very young. She was in her 20s. And, you know, she grew up, she married her husband, and always knowing that she had to maintain a specific facade and be very, very, how would I say, composed in her role as a monarch. And so much so that when her own sister, Margaret, Princess Margaret, went to her and asked her, you know, I love this man, Peter Townsend. It was her boyfriend at the time. He was married. And he wanted to be with Princess Margaret, and he divorced his wife. And she went and asked permission for her to be able to marry this man who she loved, and the queen declined her or denied her permission to marry this man.
For any follow-up, you can watch Crowns.
But it's amazing. But anyway, yeah. So that was a big ordeal. So anyway, jumpstart into today, and you think about Meghan Markle being a half-black, half-white American actress, once divorced, wants to marry the prince, Prince Harry, and she grants permission. And it was, again, the dynamics here are so shocking because of what we know the royal family stands for. But all I have to say is this. First of all, Meghan Markle was absolutely stunning in her dress. She was absolutely gorgeous girl. I'm very happy. This monarchy needed this, and needed this diversity. It needed this injection of spice and color, because let's face it, it's very white. Mm-hmm. It's extremely white. So anyway, during the wedding, a lot of things happened. The Reverend Michael Curry caused quite a stir with a spicy sermon of love that really like raised a lot of eyebrows. Like you could see like Princess Eugene, is that her name? I think that's what it is. She sort of kind of gave like her sister a side eye and looked down the aisle to see what the queen's expression would have been, which is basically nothing because, that woman doesn't have an expression. But, again, she looked amazing in her dress. And then as the whole, ceremony was happening, the Kingdom Choir served a stunning rendition of Stand By Me, which completely like just destroyed me. So I'm usually not a very sappy person, but the importance of seeing someone black, right? A person of color, a whole group of people of color singing gospel music or singing that song in a style of gospel music at St. George's Chapel was absolutely historic in itself. Because when you think about the Anglican Church of England, it's not very diverse. It's very white. And Meghan was absolutely represented. Her diversity and her blackness was represented in her wedding exceptionally well. And it was beautiful. And it was absolutely stunning and amazing. Oprah was there. Serena Williams was there. It was just an absolute stunning, stunning wedding from top to bottom. When you think about all the controversy that happened, her father, for example, wasn't able to make it to the wedding. So, she opted to walk herself up the aisle by herself, and she was met halfway through by Prince Charles, which is Harry's father. And he walked her all the way the rest of the way and gave her to the groom. Harry's ex was there.
That's crazy.
It was just, the whole thing was just so weird, but amazingly beautiful. And it was absolutely time that it just needed to happen.
Yeah, it just shows you that the world is changing and for a good, in a positive way. And it's also like a kind of a slap in the face to Donald Trump.
Of course it is, but it's like, I would have killed to be a fly in the wall to see, and they're both gone, obviously, but I would have killed to be a fly in the wall in the room if the former king and Wallace Simpson were alive today and they were watching this. I would have loved to see the conversation that these two would have had. I would love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. But one of the things that, again, that two takeaways from that wedding reception that was just absolutely gorgeous was the rendition of Stand By Me by which was originally sung by Benny King. And of course there was a cellist, Shiku Kane Mason. He's 19-year-old cellist. Oh my God. He did three numbers at the wedding and the actual ceremony, and it was absolutely beautiful. And, and again, it's worth repeating, that bitch took my ginger. I love my ginger. And anyway,
he was everybody's ginger.
I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yes. And I watched
it. You would.
Of course I did. And I watched it. And I wanted to talk about it because I know that Hans hates it. So I just sort of kind of want to just stick it to him a little bit. Now he's going to have to listen to the first half of the show talking about the wedding.
Well, I will talk about the royal wedding when there's a gay marriage.
It's coming. It's coming. So, Chris, we were having this conversation earlier. So we were talking about, so we said, the last big wedding that was had by the royal family was William and Kate's wedding. Prior to that, the last really big one was Diana and Charles. And the next big wedding is not due until Prince George, the newly born son of William. He's not the new one. He's the firstborn. Until he comes of age and finds a woman and gets married. So we're looking at probably like 20 plus years. And then you said, go ahead.
Watch, it'll be the gay one?
Yeah.
I don't remember my words. I'm like, that's how it's going to come out. Yeah, you'd be like, you'll be the gay one.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
And Queens would be like, you guys are really pushing me. Like,
she'll still be alive.
She will be.
Yo, she's 90-something years old, and her mother, the queen mother, died of 100. She was 101? There's longevity in that family, at least for the women. Can't say the
which
same
is kind of crazy because there's kind of a lot of inbreeding in royal families.
Well, another fun fact that a lot of people don't know is that Queen Victoria purposefully married off all of her children to other monarchs in Europe. So they are indeed related. They're either first or second or third cousins in some way, weird way, shape, or form. But Queen Victoria purposely actually went out and literally bartered her children for control.
Well, that's kind of what they've always done.
They did back then. But, you know, now commoners have an opportunity. So, you know, if you want to be a princess, you could be a princess too. So I'm getting my head ready for my tiara at some point. But I don't know.
Charles, break through maybe? That glass ceiling. Ooh, ceiling, girls.
Oh, another word, ceiling. Another word for the books. But anyway, it was amazing. I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought that...
You're obsessed. We know.
I am. I've always loved, you know, anything that has to do with the monarchy in Britain or in the UK, excuse me. But anyway, it was a beautiful, all in all, it was an amazing wedding. Very, very historic. Very, very groundbreaking in many ways. But definitely groundbreaking in the sense that, you know what, we've got a duchess that is a person of color, and that is absolutely fucking beautiful. It's about fucking time. That being said, let's move on.
Shall we?
Majesty.
We shall.
All right. So Christopher's got some stories. So does Nick. And we also have a guest coming on. Lord have mercy. Short for time. Chris, go.
All right. I'll keep mine in Europe. I'll go to another one in our own state following that or a little bit later. But since we're already there, there was a pride, not so much a pride, it wasn't a pride march. It was a march against homophobia, the third annual March Against Homophobia in Moldova, which was held this Saturday. And as usual, they were met by many anti-LGBT, mainly Christian Orthodox protesters marching against them. And they were heavily accompanied by police escorts to keep them safe. And one of the marchers said that there were only he experienced three aggressive incidents. One was a religious group was singing songs and throwing holy water onto them. Some person threw eggs from an upper floor apartment, and counter protesters tried to block the marching route. But those police forces that were there to protect them did just that. When counter protesters crossed the police barriers, the police moved in to push them back, even deployed tear gas to get these becoming violent anti-protesters away from these people who had every right to be there, especially when the president of Moldova in the past had said, I never said I was a president for the gays. So they knew that their commander-in-chief was never there to help them. So they had to stand up against these religious and political factions fighting for their rights to be who they are. And they continue now 3 years standing to march in the streets for their given right to protest for just equality. And that being said, over 20 foreign embassies in Moldova has signed a statement, including the United States, thanking the police for their protection. They were there to protect these people, and they did just that.
That's amazing. That's
absolutely
awesome. Here's one thing, though. You start throwing holy water at me, I'd be like, wet me down, because that's refreshing. It's hot as fuck. And if you're throwing eggs at me, let me just make sure that I have a nice little hot skillet so I can make myself some breakfast. Like, seriously, I'll be like, trying to catch
just like, can you throw a mimosa?
Seriously, right? That's what I would be like.
Some sausage and onions, thank you. I need, like, you know, I need to have breakfast down here.
But the whole point of the story was not to show that there was fierce resentment for these people marching, but the forces that were there to protect these people
actually did.
And they put everything else aside. It didn't matter. These people were there for their right to march against homophobia. And those who were there to march to be protesters to that march, they have the right to be there too. But you can't become violent like that.
Well, no. Yeah,
you can't be crossing the barriers. You can't be assaulting or attacking people. And when they began to do such things, the police force that was there took the proper stance and resisted them.
That's amazing. That's awesome. And you know what? They get claps, that police department. Yes. Because I think it's very important for police officers and people who are there to protect and serve do what they should be doing. And that's exactly that.
Especially after we just came off of the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia. So it's pretty amazing to see people standing up for our communities. But speaking of the IDAHOTB Day, there was a really amazing protest that happened in countries where there are still laws or a lot of anti-LGBT protests against the community. So there was a Kiss in Protest campaign. It's actually really, really beautiful. I'm reading this story, of course, from unicornbooty.com.
Oh, I was late.
It's okay. But there were events around the world in Paris, Sao Paulo, Mexico, and Taipei. Am I saying it wrong? I'm saying it wrong. But
Taipei.
There you go. where they Tuscan. Hundreds of people kissed in solidarity with all those LGBTQ people who cannot kiss in public without fear of being arrested or attacked. So it wasn't just LGBT members kissing in solidarity. It was allies and people standing up for our communities that are being put down in these countries. I mean, there are still 70 countries where it's either illegal or there are some type of laws against the community. So
that's beautiful.
And remember, I believe it was in Amsterdam. And I don't know if it was during when the Netherlands was voting on when they were having their election last year, it was after a gay bashing incident. But residents of Amsterdam were walking down the street holding hands, same sex.
I remember covering this
story.
Yeah,
and it started with people, the members of parliament, I believe. Men and men were holding hands, and women, regardless if they were just friends, they were just allies. And I think that those things go a long way.
Yeah.
It's beautiful for visibility.
And to see, even members that are not part of the LGBT community to participate
right.
and become a part of this is just beautiful to see, because it shows that, you know what, we are not alone.
No.
And we need to remind ourselves sometimes that, we see all these atrocities happening and everything in the media and et cetera. And that's just that. They're just showing you the ugly side of humanity, especially against us. But more times than not, or more often than not, you see that there are a lot of people that do support us and do amazing, beautiful things for us.
I mean, I just want to focus it in a little bit more about the 70 countries that we were talking about. People are continually arrested, tortured, and killed in regions within Russia, Indonesia, Africa, throughout the Caribbean, and the British Commonwealth. And even though this article says even tolerant countries like Brazil, people are still being murdered and attacked. Obviously, we've talked about it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So tolerant countries like Brazil, Paris, and the United States have all instances of anti-LGBT rhetoric and violence aimed to make queer people feel ashamed of who they are and afraid for their lives. And speaking of this, last night I was opening the bar. And I was outside because nobody was in the bar yet, and I went outside to smoke a cigarette, and somebody was walking by the bar, and he turns around and he just goes, "Hey, faggot, how are you?" And it wasn't meant obviously in a nice way. First of all, faggot is a horrible word. You should not be using it. Second, this individual was a member of a minority group. Don't feel the need to divulge what group that is, but as a member of a minority group, if you put down somebody else who is in a minority group, it's going against everything we work toward, everything you have to deal with on a daily basis. If you're in a minority and you're putting down another minority, how is that helping your cause?
It's not.
The reason we say constantly that the LGBTQ community is so amazing and inclusive is because it includes everyone, all minorities, every single person, every single race is represented within our community. Every single religion is represented within our community. And we stand together as one. And the fact that a minority from another community can come and attack our community, it's just really upsetting to me. I mean, you know what being racially profiled is like. You know what being put down is like. And as a minority, you should stand up for every other fucking minority out there.
And that's been a problem throughout the throughout history of mankind. When one minority is being put down, sometimes the way that they feel the best to push them forward is to put someone else down. That happened here with free freed blacks in the 1800s putting down the Irish Americans going in World War II. Like, the Jews were obviously tormented and scapegoats, but the Poles were also hated, and the Poles would put the Jews down. Like, these different minority groups will put other minority groups down to make themselves seem superior and make others inferior to them. And it's a sad and disgusting slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's really powerful, though, like I said earlier about our community, is because we incorporate all the minorities and all the religions within our one community. We all have the opportunity to reach out to our individual minority group or religion group and start those conversations to help mm-hmm. change that horrible rhetoric and horrible behavior.
And another important thing, too, that people need to realize is, too, that because we have a religious aspect in our community, that, you know, they do a very good job at engaging these minority groups within our own groups, within our own LGBT community, to start that conversation, which is amazing. So on that note, we are going to take a break, because when we come back, we do have the incredible Hans Hershey with us. So we're going to leave you with some music, and we will be right back.
My head gets caught in the moment, but my heart doesn't know it. Heart doesn't know it. Somehow I'm lost in the lonely, but it's too hard to show it. Too hard to show it. Dansez avec moi. Dansez avec moi. Dansez avec moi. Do I fall? Sun on my shoulders, the sun's on my shoulders. My heart's a winding road, but I can't control it, and nobody knows it. Do I fall in love? 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 Do I fall?
Right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from our break. That was Dance With Me with the incredible Davis Mallory, a previous guest of ours. But joining us now is the author of the book Returning to the Land of the Morning Calm, which released today to the masses. Welcome back to the show, Hans Hershey.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, we can hear you loud and clear, baby.
Good, good.
Are you recording?
I just made some more poop advertising.
Poop advertising.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, because every time every time you share the digital stream radio page, because we have the advertisement in that page for Squatty Potty, that's what you get for.
I guess it's perfect clickbait, right? I mean,
well, you know, all conversation ends in shit, so it's appropriate.
Especially our conversation.
Yeah, especially with us, yeah.
So, yeah. So how are you, Hans?
Tired.
How's tired. That beauty sleep treating you?
Gosh.
He covers the
camera's camera, yep.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I actually did get 3 hours of sleep, so I'm good. My husband was slightly, why are you going to bed? And I said, well, I got to be up again at 1. So.
Well, we certainly appreciate the fact that, you know, you're up and here with us. For our listeners who don't know, Hans is all the way in Sweden, and therefore it is 1 a.m. in the morning there, while it is 7:13 p.m. here. And so, you know, the fact that he took the time to get up from his restful beauty sleep. It means a lot. It really does.
You.
So you've had quite an eventful day. You came out with a new book today. That book is Returning to the Land of the Morning Calm. And we want to talk about it today. So I want you to, first of all, tell us a little bit about the book, what inspired you to write it, and then we'll go into some details.
Okay. So Returning to the Land of the Morning Calm, and I guess if people are curious about what it looks like, there is a picture of it on your website.
Uh-huh.
Ready? Oh, thanks for that. Is the story of an octogenarian, which basically means a really old guy, who spent his youth, or he spent 4 years of his youth in Korea, where he met someone, and then he had to go back to the States. And when we meet him, he's really, really old. And he's looking back on his life, and he meets a couple of people, and meeting these people makes him reflect or look back on his life and you know, what if and what was and what could have been. And eventually he travels back to Korea to find if that one true love of his life is still out there. So. And that was the idea for the story itself came, I wanted to write a short story. So the idea was it was supposed to be a really, really short story for an anthology. And yeah, Martin just didn't shut up. So,
oh, Martin.
But where did you get the inspiration for this? Have you met somebody that was in a situation like this, or is this just something that came to you?
It's not as far-fetched as you might think, because when you write about someone, I had made the decision to write about someone in his 80s. Okay. So when you go back, when you look at someone who's 84, 85 years old, and you do the math and you say, okay, so you're a young American, what would your life have been like if you were 18 around 1950?
Right.
Okay. So chances are you might have been conscripted. You know, it's not far-fetched, because a lot of people were. And where would you have been whisked off if that had been the case, you know? And you start to look at it, it wouldn't have been World War II, because that was over.
Right.
You might have been ended up in Germany, you know, like Elvis.
Grandfather.
You know, or your grandfather. But there was a war going on, and that was the Korean War. So, mm-hmm. And so it was, there was a significant chance that someone might have been whisked off to Korea, so.
Which a lot of people don't realize, the Korean War is still not over. I mean, we still have this conflict between the North and the South, which, you know, nations and many, many different politicians have tried to mitigate the differences between the North and the South, but that's still going.
Though they are claiming to possibly have officially end the Korean War possibly this year. Those talks are out there, but we'll have to sit back and wait and see, even if our president is going to meet with Kim Jong-un. So that's, you know, there's works Maybe. Out there, but we have to wait and see what's actually going to happen.
Just so that our listeners are aware, we ended up getting an advanced copy. Thank you, Hans, for allowing us to read your material, because he always does, and he's fantastic. But I started reading your book. I haven't finished it, but I promise you I will. But I started reading your book, and for the first time ever, and I posted this on my Facebook page. For the first time ever, I wanted to literally dive into a book and punch a character in the face.
What character?
So it was actually the son of Mrs. Jefferson, which is one of the patients at this particular place that you know takes care of older people in their older age. And you know, I don't want to give too much away, but anyway, at some point in time, Mrs. Jefferson passes away, and you know, one of the characters, Kevin, calls her son or next of kin to let him know, listen, your mom passed away, blah, whatnot. And he was just so nonchalant about it. Well, yeah, you know, okay, well, thank you. And like, he wanted nothing to do with it. And I'm just like, dude, this is your mother. I literally wanted to jump in the book and just punch this guy in the face. But then there's so much more that happens that gets even more crazy and in your face and really like stirring emotions about people and family as you keep reading. So I encourage our listeners to continue to do that. But you made that happen. I wanted to actually punch someone in your book.
Okay. Well, as long as you don't want to punch me.
No.
Sorry.
No.
So I'm reading the book. I am loving it, which is surprising because you wrote it. We had the opener. I was like, wow, like I'm really into this book. Are we sure Hans wrote it? So there is a moment in the beginning when Martin is interacting with one of his aides, Kevin, and there's never a moment where he actually vocally says, you know, I'm gay or, you know, this is just my life. But there's just like this understanding between the two characters, and they have a conversation about love and finding somebody. And I was just so taken aback at the fact that there's no coming out in this, and it was so powerful and beautiful to me that they could have a conversation about being gay without saying, "Oh, well, I'm gay." They just kind of they just had the conversation, and I just wanted to pick your brain. Like, was that intentional, or was that just how it all came out?
I guess between Kevin and Martin, I guess it just kind of happened. You know, there's this thing which is interesting. There's this thing called gaydar.
Oh yeah.
I know you haven't had yours installed, but
valid.
But no, I mean it's, which is kind of funny because there has been this, a lot of debate about the existence of the gaydar, whether there's actually such a thing or not. Some people think it's very. What do you call it? God, brain, come on, jumpstart.
It's okay, it's 1 a.m.
It's rude. No, yeah. So some people think it's rude to claim there's such a thing as gaydar because you can't tell whether someone is gay or not. Mm-hmm. And I've always been, you know, having grown up and always having relied on this gaydar, particularly during the periods where there weren't no such things as Grindr and what you want to call it out there. And you basically had to rely on people you met to basically see if someone was family or not, or at least make an assumption. And even though it is an assumption, there's, at least if you ask me, there's it's a very real thing out there. And I strongly believe in it, particularly given recent advancements in research. You know, nowadays you can ask a computer, you can show it some pictures of people, and the computer will very accurately tell you whether someone is gay or not.
Yeah,
which is quite scary.
Yeah.
So if a computer algorithm can do it, why shouldn't we be able to do it? You know, based on. Certain facial features, based on clothing, based on, yes, I know there's this assumption that there's a lot of stereotyping going on and but heck, you know, it's worked for such a long time. I mean, you can literally, I think that I'm fairly good. My gaydar used to be not working either, but I over the years I've learned to fine tune it, and I think I'm pretty good at picking up on those signals, and I think people in general within the community are, particularly when you live in a community or particularly when you live in a time where you have to be careful, mm-hmm. you know, when your life depends on it, you know?
Yeah, and there have been... There have been people, there have been studies that have come out that, you know, gay men or gay people in general have a higher emotional intelligence than an IQ. So with that higher emotional intelligence, you're able to kind of feel and read people a little bit differently and better, I personally think. So I think gaydar is a real thing.
Don't ever ask me to read what I see in you, but that's okay.
Nasty. I was trying to be nice.
No, but right, nice. Exactly. But you know, going back to the book, so Kevin, obviously they have this relationship, and you know, it doesn't need to be said that both are gay, but it is understood as you start progressing through the story. But when I start thinking about the beginning of the book, for example, Martha was very influential in this place for this character, and I think that when Kevin came to work right before, you know, she retires, I think that there would have been a conversation and some sort of like dialogue between Martha and Kevin, indicating, hey, this is what you could expect with this patient. So I think that maybe Kevin had a heads up going into the situation.
Possibly. I mean, it's just off page. I mean, there are mentions in the story that Kevin tells Martin about the fact that why he became goth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not explained in the story itself, but it's kind of off page because most of us know what a goth is it's explained somewhere that the reason he chose the goth community in his high school was to be able to be better shielded from homophobia in his school. It was just kind of like a costume he put on. So I'm sure there was a discussion somewhere at one point or another, but. Mm-hmm. Even if there wasn't, I'm fairly certain they would have worked it out anyway.
So another thing that I noticed immediately, like reading the first two chapters of the book, is that you start to get invested in the story, and throughout the entire story, not knowing that you know, Martin is a black man, right? And that's very subtly mentioned. But it's an amazing story because not many people would take a story like this and bring it to you from a perspective of a black person. And I thought that it was very beautiful that, you know, you incorporated your story and you built it on a person of color, but that it didn't need to be like in your face throughout the entire book. We knew at some point in time that Martin was a black individual and that he was having this amazing relationship with this young man that he met on the other side of the globe. But I found it very interesting that you subtly threw that hint out there, but it wasn't really like splattered all over the book. It was very beautiful the way that it just all like tied into, and that was only like the first 2.5 chapters.
Yeah, it was a little bit into the book, and I have to, I'm happy Tom brought that up because that was something that I had talked about some of my coworkers with, and I talked to Trish about it. It's funny how our brains work. Me being a white man, as I was reading the beginning of your novel, I automatically assumed that Martin was a white man.
Yep.
And I highlighted it and even made it a note that it just came in just like that, that nope, I was completely wrong assuming that Martin was a white man. He's actually a black man.
I assume Martin could have been Martin. And we were talking because you mentioned there was a janitor there. I believe his name was Jose. So, you know, mm-hmm. there was a lot of like different like Latino influences in the beginning of the book as well. So I was like, I made an assumption as well. So I was mm-hmm. pleasantly surprised that, you know, the entire story revolves around the relationship between a person in South Korea and a black man from America who happens to be in the military serving in Korea during the Korean War.
Mm. And so, I think that was a very purposeful thing from my part. And exactly for the reason that Chris mentioned, you know, we all have that bias. And the funny thing is even people of color have that bias,
mm-hmm.
you know, so when people of color read the average novel, and it is not specified what color the main character is, they automatically assume it's white, which is kind of scary, but it's just how we're all trained and socialized. You know, it's like when we read a novel, we automatically assume Dumbledore is straight, right? Until somebody comes along 10 years later and says, oh, no, Dumbledore was supposed to be gay.
I think they should have still written that into the movie.
Why didn't you tell us?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Why didn't you tell us?
Why didn't you put it in the movie?
I think it's going to be coming out in the new movies. But anyway, okay. Hans.
Yeah. But you get the point. So we all have that assumption. You know, it's heteronormativity. It's just the way the world works. Mm. And it's the same thing with white being the norms. You basically have to mention it. You have to put in these markers, you know. With Jose, the janitor, that was kind of easy. But you didn't mention the guy you wanted to punch in the face. He's married to
a man.
You didn't get that far, have you?
No. I'm still working my way up. So I took micro notes.
Okay. Yeah.
So for those of you, I've mentioned this before.
Last week.
There's a lot going on. Plus, I was sick and I was getting rid of something that she happily took over. I'm very proud of you. But what I've read thus far is just absolutely amazing, and I want to finish the book, and I told you that I will, and I will. But, you know, again, the whole point is to have you come out and tell us about the book, because we want our listeners to know that, you know, you're an LGBT author, we're an LGBT show, and we want to be able to have people support people that write amazing, beautiful stories that shine a spotlight on the LGBT community. And this book really does that very well. And it does that in an amazing way, because it not only takes you on this journey from a perspective of someone who's much, much, much older, like in their 80s, but it also transcends and it really brings you back to another era. You know, for some, an era that they never even knew existed, and for others, an era that they probably forgot. And so you really do very well in how you jump time.
Which is something I wanted to ask you about. So we've been talking about all of these different key parts of the story that you touch on, like the fact that Martin's a black man, the fact that Kevin's goth, the fact that Martin fell in love with a Korean man, Jose, who's Hispanic. There's all these elements within the story that speak to so many levels within our community and in the heterosexual community. Mm-hmm. But also, on top of all that, there's the whole ageism thing in here. We've even spoken to people that have listened to our show that are of an age where they went through this. And I guess my question is, how do you take all of that and actually formulate it into a story that makes sense, like chronologically and in order? It just boggles my mind that you've forced so much important stuff into this beautiful story.
I know. I just write. You know, I don't know. I can't really explain that question, but the way these things come to me are very subconscious. I don't really have much control over my writing once I am writing. What made this story slightly different was the fact that there were so many things I didn't know about the Korean War itself. Apart from the obvious, you know, when it took place and the combatants and that sort of stuff. So there was a lot of stuff that I didn't know. And I spent an entire, actually flew down to Korea at the beginning of the year to do some research on site, because I had been to Korea 3 times before. But when you visit a place, either for business, the first two trips were basically business trips. You fly in, you meet in hotels or business towers, and then you fly back out again. And the third one was just your basic tourist trip, and you don't do all the research, you don't get the answers to all the questions you're going to need 5 years down the line. So and being in Korea changed my outlook on the story itself. So you'll see once you get to the life parts in Korea, because there are flashbacks throughout the book where you are being transported back to the 1950s. And then also, once the three men actually fly to Korea in our present time, you'll see there's a lot of that research that has found its way into the story itself. And I felt once I had been in Korea, I needed to do the country justice in a way that I hadn't been able to before I had done all that research. But when it comes to what it's like being gay, God, I've been around for so long. You know, I'm 27. I mean, I just noticed it. You know, I know what to expect. So this isn't really anything new to me. You know, it's just stuff you know once you've been around the block for a couple of times.
Yeah, but something that I loved about it, like we talked on the age and we talked about the race, but when you and you can tell you've definitely had your research here. When it comes to Koreans, you know, family orientation is so dear to Korean culture, and something I found kind of puzzling, and I'm going to bring it back toward the middle of the book, so I'm not going to be giving anything away. But when you look at Martin and Ji-hoon, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I think I am. When Martin is doing so much, not only to just spend time with Ji-hoon, but to contribute to what's going on with their family, it's almost as, and Martin brings it up, is the family so much turning an eye, knowing that maybe there's something going on and accepting the stuff that he's doing to help them? Or is it solely just they're not even noticing it and they're looking at as just friends? So that's something that I loved about it so much. The puzzling part of, are they going to find out? Do they even care? Do they know? But he's helping us so much. And that's something I love, because you can really tell that you did the research on how family is so important to the Korean culture.
Yeah, and I don't have the answer either. So I can honestly tell you, I don't know. But it's something that I've discussed with people on site, you know, with friends I have in Korea, and I've had people, you know, the sensitivity readers look at the story. Does it work? Is it genuine? Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is write about a culture that you're not intimately familiar with and screw it up.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I felt I needed to do that, and the feedback was good. I mean, they felt that I had captured the essence of what it means to be Korean, which is really all you can ask for. I mean, you can never, you know, I would never be able to write a truly, you know, a 100% Korean story, because I don't have that intimate knowledge of Korean society. And again, you know, even when you look at, and here's the other thing, when you write a story about people, you're never going to be able to capture every experience that every person in that culture ever had. You're talking about one individual or maybe two individuals, you know. And I think the same thing is true for Martin. I'm not trying to describe the African American situation in the United States by any means. You know, I wouldn't be able to, because you can capture the entire experience of what it means to be African American in one person's life. It just doesn't work that way.
Or the USGI in Korea at the time, exactly.
Whatever. You know, I mean, it just, you can't. And that's why I think that's one of the things people also need to be aware of, that when they read a story, it's never going to be about them. And that's something that we as authors face all the time. You know, you have people reading your books and they come back, but that's not what it's like for me. And I said, well, I'm sorry, you know, but I didn't write about you.
It wasn't a biography.
I write about this character, and that's what the experience is like for this character, you know, but there are still, you know, I'm not sure, Chris, did you finish the book? Have you read the ending?
I did not finish the ending. I'm getting very close though.
Okay. So, you know, even with the ending, and I'm not going to give it away, but even with the ending of the story, there was only one way I could end that story, and doing both the Korean culture and Martin justice and, you know, what I wanted to tell. There's literally only one way this book can end. And it wasn't the easiest way to do it. It wasn't the easiest ending. I rewrote it like four or five times, but it was the only way that the story justice, the characters, the culture, yet at the same time, make sure that, you know, it is the kind of ending that I aspire to provide my readers with. So, but yeah, it's something you always have to consider, you know, be true to what you're trying to talk about, you know, the cultures and those aspects.
Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that I've always appreciated that you do is, again, as Nick and Chris have mentioned, is that you take the time to research and one of the best things that I think that you do is that you actually go to places and actually really immerse yourself and try to get a firsthand perspective before you start writing, or even after. Like, for example, you had mentioned to us that you're planning a trip, right? You want to come to the U.S. and visit Dutchess County, which is, you know, the whole area north of Yonkers, going all the way up to Persephone and Newburgh and stuff, and visit the area that you're writing about where the story takes place. Can you divulge a little bit as to what's the importance of doing that?
There are, I mean, you know, part of the story plays out in, most of the story plays out in upstate New York, you know, by the Hudson. And while I haven't been there myself, it was easy enough for me to get the information that I needed that is in the book from online resources, and having been to the city of New York itself quite a few times. And there are a few scenes that actually do play out in New York itself. But what I do is when I write about a place, I think the most important aspect for me is to capture the emotional essence of being there. And so every author, every writer has their own way of talking about the places where they're at. I have one of my best friends, when she writes her novels, you read her descriptions of a living room or a pub or a village, you can literally see it before you. I mean, she does such an amazing job at describing exactly what it looks like. You feel transported into that place. That's not how I write. My writing, when I try to describe a place, it's more to capture the emotional essence of a place, which is a different approach. So I care whether you have an accurate picture of the locale, but I want you to feel it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I felt
so
it.
So that's what I'm trying to achieve. Whether it's New York, you know, there's a scene where Joshua, the poor schmuck you wanted to punch in the face.
Yeah, you learn a lot more about Joshua later. So I took it easy before that.
Yeah. So Joshua's actually a really nice kid, and there's very good reasons why he reacted the way he did. Apart from shock, there's a couple of scenes with Joshua, that play out in New York, in the bus station, you know, and I just wanted people, you don't really have to picture what the bus station down in Midtown looks like. You just have to feel what that place is like for a 17-year-old kid who's scared and all alone. That's really what I try to do. So when I travel, I do a lot of research online, but when I travel to a place, and I think that's really what would change things for me. When I went to Seoul, it was primarily to find information with regards to the war, images, descriptions of what Seoul, the city of Seoul, looked like during the war, because it was ravaged so badly. I mean, I had read myself to a lot of that information. But I hadn't seen the images. I hadn't felt the emotional impact, you know. And when I spent days researching for imagery and information about the war, and I finally saw those black and white pictures of Seoul completely ravaged, completely destroyed. I mean, downtown Seoul was destroyed 80%, you know. And then you have the contrast to modern Seoul, which is, it's unbelievable. And I try to capture that emotional essence in the story itself. There's more than one scene where Martin is completely overwhelmed upon his return. Because it's one thing to look at it in a picture online, but it's a different thing when you're actually standing in it. And you have your memories of, this is what this looked like. When I looked at this, when I was 18 years old, this is what it looked like. And now it looks completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are a couple of scenes where Martin is completely overwhelmed by this sensation of being lost on a different planet almost, because he just can't get it.
And you do an excellent job in the book where Martin is, you know, walking through Seoul and he's seeing all this destruction and devastation and he's seeing these Koreans just try to go on and have a normal day like their lives have not been burnt to the ground and completely destroyed and taken from them and just move on. And that's so moving to him. And that was the emotional. That's what grabbed me emotionally. Like I was putting myself in Martin's shoes, looking around at, I know this city is just gone. Their homes are taken. Their businesses are burned. Their livestock's dead. Their children are starving, but they're still trying every day to go out and try to live life again. And you definitely brought me there in those scenes.
That was one of the, there was one photograph that I saw. I mean, I saw literally hundreds of photographs from wartime Seoul. But there was one picture that was taken, I think it was taken in 1955 or 1957. It was a black and white picture of a bunch of people with umbrellas lying in the sun by the River Han. And it was just, I was looking at this picture and said, this can't be it. This cannot be a true and accurate reflection of what it must be like during the war. You know, now, granted, this was post-war. This was after the ceasefire. But you know, you see the pictures of entire neighborhoods, and we're talking square mile after square mile, completely flattened. There's not a single building left standing. And then you turn around and you see this picture of people lounging by the beach, smiling, having fun. There's beach balls and there's that beach umbrella, you know. And that picture burnt itself onto my retina. So I couldn't get rid of it. So I wrote an entire scene based around that one black and white photograph.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because it made such a strong impression on me. And so that is not made up. That is actually based on reality. And I wanted to show, I had to show that even through this destruction, this complete mayhem that war brings to people, you still have that reality of life going on. People fall in love. You know, they have sex. They have kids. Kids grow up. They play. You know, you have that sense of normalcy even during war, and I had to find a way to describe that. And I think that beach scene does a very good job at that.
I agree. That was a very nice scene. I remember that vividly.
So before we wrap up the show, I just want to share something with you. We started the show with a quote from the book. but I think love as an emotion isn't about finding the one. It's more about finding love, period. I think we're capable of loving more than once, and that there are several, if not many, suitable partners out there. And I don't know why, but I read that, and then I reread it, and then I read it again. And I was like, it just hit me so hard reading that. I think it's probably partially because of where I am in life, but
every other month, but go ahead.
I guess... You know, that was Martin speaking to Kevin. But I guess my question for you is, was this something that came from you? Like, is this how you feel about love, or is this just completely Martin?
Nah, that would be me. That's pretty much my life's mantra.
Well, it's beautiful.
One of my deeply held convictions is that, But you know what is Martin is the beginning. Is that one sentence at the beginning, the one in Korea at the very beginning of the book? Hold on to love; you may never find it again. Mm-hmm. That is more. That is Martin. His outlook is slightly different than mine. I believe that we have. More than one shot at love in life, and that we, you know, that we can make it work with more than one person would be pretty sad otherwise.
Yeah.
There's only the one and you never find him or her. That would be a pretty fucked up life.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I just love it. How all of a sudden it's like Trish and Hans are exchanging these amazing, beautiful, like back and forth of like compliments and being lovey. I'm not used to this relationship between
We've
you guys.
We've connected on social media.
Yeah. Normally they're like chewing each other's head off on social media. You know, when he's not calling me.
Yeah. it's you're the one who wanted to cut me. So, I mean, we're through.
That's valid. That's valid.
That is true. No, but Hans, you know I love you. I love you to death. Well, not to death, but I love you to the moon and back. Let's just leave it there. But so, Hans, you're going to be traveling to the States. You're going to be coming sometime around the Christmas time. And I hope that once you're here, that we'll be able to connect and hang out, because we did come down and had an amazing time in the city with you. It was very short, but it was amazing nonetheless. Right, Christopher? We had
absolutely
a great time.
Great dinner.
Trish missed it. Mm-hmm. We're sort of kind of glad you did, because at that time, I think you guys were like ready to kill each other.
We can't let him go yet. I have something else I want to say about the book.
Go for it.
Something that I found really cool. He mentions a dish that came from the 1950s.
That's right.
Budae jjigae, which he actually was kind enough to put his rendition of this recipe at the end of the book, titled Armistice Budae jjigae. And I actually, last Tuesday, I opened up the book, I saw this recipe, and I happened to be grocery shopping that night. It was last Tuesday. And I said, you know what? I'm going to make this dish.
The bitch made it.
I made it. I did a couple changes for my personal taste, which you said I could do. It says, you know, you can, this was your interpretation. You could vary it. I highly recommend it. One, it was very cool to learn about the history of the dish. Obviously, this dish came from the 1950s.
50s.
Shut up, Trish. I thought we got by it. I thought I was safe. Anyway, the dish comes from the 1950s. The Korean Peninsula was ravaged with war. Food was incredibly scarce. So people were using whatever they could get, whether it be smuggled from the army bases in Korea, taken from trash cans, whatever people could get to make a meal using their traditional items. And like I said, whatever they can get their hands on. And I highly recommend looking at the back of the book after you read it, following the recipe, doing a couple tweaks on your own to make it right for you. It's a great dish. It's substantial. And there's only two of us in the household, and I made it last us a week. So thank you for that. It was delicious. It was awesome. It was awesome.
All I have to say is I wouldn't be able to tell you how that dish went, because we never got an invite, one, and we never got to taste it.
The house smelled like fish. You would not have been happy.
I would have just told you to close your legs.
Get out of here. Don't encourage him, Hans.
But anyway,
I'm not.
So, you know, Hans, definitely when you're in town, we need to connect. We need to connect. I really enjoy not only our friendship, but you know, our interactions on social media. I think that you're a very amazing author, and our listeners need to look for your stuff and support. Not only because you're a great writer, but also because you're a member of the LGBT community, you're a father, you're a husband, and you do so much for our community and write so well, and put our community in a very, very, very amazing spotlight. And I think that in itself deserves people to go out and check out the book.
So I'm sitting here scrolling on my phone. Don't think that I'm ignoring you. So a couple of weeks ago, Hans commented on something on social media, and he said something about me that was like, I think Trish is my soul, like, I don't know, because I was something about the show, and you said something where you equated yourself to me like in a positive way, and I was like, oh my god, Hans actually likes me.
I think
so. I was trying to find that quote, but I can't find it.
I think you were on one of your soapboxes, and he agreed.
I think it was 2:30 in the morning, and Hans has had too much soju. That's probably what it was.
No, it's not. I usually listen to you guys either on the treadmill still or walking to and from the gym. I listen to the show every week, and I have to say, I mean, I really enjoy what you talk about. But when Trish gets up on her soapbox, it usually gets very real, you know. And I do agree with her 99% of the time, actually.
I'll take 99%.
You'll take it. We're proud of
her. Thank you, Hans. That means a lot. That actually means a lot to me. Thank you.
Before we let you go, I will warn you, I would say probably maybe the first 10 minutes, skip it. Skip it tomorrow, because you're not going to want to hear about the whole royal wedding.
Tom did it just for you.
Oh God. Yeah, that was painful. But again, you know, it is Monday and it's still not over, but... Oh, well, it is what it is.
Well, I know that we're probably rolling up at 2 o'clock in the morning on your time there. And again, I want to thank you for taking the time, waking up, and
you're welcome.
Talking to us and giving us the lowdown on your new book. This book is available on Amazon. It's also available on iTunes, and it's also available on Barnes & Noble. We're going to be putting all of the links to the books so that you guys can access them in their electronic format or even on paperback. I was going to say
Martin is not going to approve of that.
What?
Yeah, no, he wants a hardcover.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's a hardcover.
Yeah.
But anyway,
he won't read it, but that's fine.
Well, Hans, thank you again, and have yourself a wonderful evening. Get back to bed, and we will see you when you come back to New York.
Well, do you want to, sorry, not to cut you off, did you want to plug yourself or any upcoming projects that you're working on?
Plug myself. I'm easy to find. I'm kind of over social media at this point. I'm really tired of it.
Heard.
But yeah, I'm everywhere. I'm, you know, Instagram, Twitter. You just look for me, Hans Hershey. I'm not that hard to find. In terms of projects I'm working on, I just sent off the manuscript to a children's book to my publisher this morning.
Is it an LGBTQ children's book?
Of course.
Yes!
Mama Kim is going to have another book to buy.
Of course. No, it's tentatively titled Valerius and Evander, the Prince and the Stable Hand, the Dragon Princess. So it's about two boys growing up, and there's a dragon princess coming in at some point. It's very exciting. Lots, you know, you need to have dragons in a kid's book. They love dragons.
Absolutely.
Dragons are always good.
I still love dragons.
Yeah.
Well, when that book gets rolling, let us know, because we'll obviously want to talk to you about it.
Maybe you'll finally be able to read one of my books.
Hey, I'm going to finish this book. I have a lot going on in my life.
I keep telling you.
You know, I was actually saying to Chris earlier, it is so hard to find time to sit down and read
on
a book.
This was actually the first time where with the semester over, I was like, I don't have to do homework. I don't want to watch TV. I'm going to read this book. And I'm almost done. I'm not lying when I say that. I'm almost done. I didn't get to finish it for today, but I am almost there.
Well, I mean, we had to do the show.
Yes, exactly. So thank you, Hans.
Han knows that I take micro naps. Are you kidding me? I read a chapter and I fall asleep. Then I come back to it the next week. That's how I do. That's how I did my homework, even for school. It's like I have to take micro naps.
Yep. I get you.
All right. Well, Hans, thank you. Get to bed.
Thank
we
you.
Love you.
I will.
Big kisses.
Take care.
Good night, Thanks Hans. Thank you.
Bye, Hans. Bye.
Good night. Okay. So as I said before, we're going to put all the links for the book on our post for the show, for tonight's show. And we'll even put it on our social media as well, because again, you know, I really do love the way this man writes. This man does great work. And he's also a great person, you know, and when you meet Hans in person, that's when you really get the essence of who he is.
He's fun to hang out with. Yeah,
yes, he is.
And he is a good author. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you.
Well, I was gonna say, he is a good author. It's a nice, easy read. Like, it keeps you wanting to go back. And hearing him describe that picture that he was looking at with war-torn soul sitting on the Han River with these women with their umbrellas, that scene, I remember that exact scene reading it. And it made perfect sense. And that's so incredible that was based on an actual photograph. Because I remember with Martin and Ji-hoon, and I forget Ji-hoon's younger sister's name, but they took the bus and they walked and they got to this part on the river to have a nice beach day. And Ji-hoon was sitting out in the water and all the boys were like looking at her, but she wasn't approaching. And Martin was giving her cookies. I remember the scene so vividly, and just knowing that that was an actual historical moment is incredible.
Stop. Don't ruin it for the rest of the readers.
I didn't give anything away.
So anyway, if you want to check out all of his other stuff, he's got amazing work. So he did Last Winter Snow. His last one before this book was Disease. There's short stories beneath the rainbow, all of which we've all discussed on the show. This is Han's fourth time coming on our show.
Watch out, Hartman.
Oh, he's gonna knock you out. And of course, when he does his children's book, we're gonna want to talk to him about that as well. Because again, you know, Trish has a very, very soft spot for and affinity for children's books, and especially those that are amazingly written and really talk about.
It's not issues. About the book. It's about the youth. It's about LGBTQ youth and about educating youth. It's not. It's not that I have a like. I go home and read children's books all the time.
Wait. How is it that Cardi B says? That's why I think.
Oh my God.
Bitch. Anyway, so we've got a couple of more things that we'd like to talk about before we wrap up the show and bring it home. So I'm going to throw it to my boys. I do not have a story for the second segment of the show, but my boys do. So Christopher, why don't you kick it off?
I was going to say, speaking of LGBT youth, this one goes not Connecticut, but kind of close and kind of relevant to my life. This actually comes from Long Island.
Oh,
it's a cute story, and you know it.
And why does it come from Long Island? Because Chris Bobby's
comes from
there.
Long Island every weekend.
Mm-hmm. Not every weekend. Also, my first story today came from
unicornbooty.com. Forgot to say that.
And he probably comes in Long Island too. But anyway, go.
That's disgusting. So there's a week-long LGBTQ summer camp that will be launched on Long Island this August. The pilot program is for kids ages 12 to 18. The program is called Camp Ga'ava. I don't know Hebrew, which is a Hebrew word for pride, which is really cute.
So this is a Hebrew camp.
It's a Jewish camp.
For LGBT youth?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Now, you don't have to be Jewish to go.
Okay.
But it's a Jewish camp, and they gained funding, and they believe that only 20 campers are expected to join this summer at the campgrounds in Wheatley Heights, but more will be accepted if you're interested. The camp received a $40,000 grant to get started this year with a plan to have a full 7 to 8 week program come next year. So this is just the first week, but we wanted to put it out there for, you know, any parents who, you know, who talk with their kids and really want to get them involved. You don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to be LGBT. You can get your allies, any friends who just want to get together. And the way that they say it, it's a summer camp serving Long Island for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth and their allies. The camp is located at Henry Kaufman Campgrounds in Wheatley Heights in New York. And the camp will be featuring swimming programs, drama, sports, arts, yoga, rope courses, certain trips, music, and much more. So it's just really great. And the staff they're going to be specialized in art therapies, music therapies, social work, LGBTQ leaders and camp professionals. They're going to have leadership training, fireside chats, and special guest speakers. I think it's going to be a great thing for the youth of Long Island.
Yeah, that's amazing. Bobby. I had acupuncture this past week, and right next to my acupuncturist's office is a therapist's office, and she's really close with they share the same office, you know what I mean? So they're close. And so when I was getting acupuncture, she brought up this kid. She didn't mention names, but he was actually in session while I was in session, and he is younger. He's in high school. He just came out, and he is feeling completely lost, like he doesn't have a community. And they were asking me, like, resources locally that, you know, where could he volunteer or like things that he can do. And I gave him a bunch of information. But like, this is amazing for parents who know that their kids are gay and their kids may or may not be feeling lost or confused or that like they don't have a community. I mean, it took me years to really build a community. This could be their first network, right? Mm-hmm. Like when I was an intern, that was my first network of professionals. This could be their first community network into the LGBTQ community. And the fact that they're providing such amazing services and fun things for these kids, finally these kids 12 to 18 can feel comfortable in their own skin and be around people and express themselves fully.
Right.
It's beautiful.
I mean, like I said, you know, they're only expected about 20 campers this season, but with that $40,000 grant, they're expecting to run a month to 2 month program come next year. And I think that's absolutely incredible. And with it, especially being a day camp, campers can go and they can have their fun and they can learn and they can meet new people. And then they can go home and they can share these experiences at the dinner table with their families.
I would love Chris, since you're always in Long Island, if you can follow up on this and see, maybe not this year, maybe the following year, maybe we can go down and do a weekend workshop with these kids. You know, podcasting or you know, connecting with the international LGBT community, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But it would be I just want to help support and, you know, be more physically and involved with children, you know. That sounded kind of gross physically. But like you know, it's great to talk on air, but I want to see these kids and look them in the face and tell them everything's going to be okay.
Right. And yeah. And
don't judge, like, the, you know, Versace bags under my eyes. It's just like,
you don't have to look like that when you get older.
They're Prada, Gucci, Fendi.
But I think it's absolutely great. And I love, again, it's Camp Ga'ava. We'll put all the information on our site. And on the top of the cover of the pamphlet, it has the rainbow flag with the camp name in a tree. And it says, be carefree, be strong, be courageous, be inspired, be happy, be you.
That's mm-hmm. awesome and beautiful.
And I think that's incredible. So I think it's a step in the right direction. Definitely look into it. We have, you know, we have Mama Kim listening to us. Again, thank you for our beautiful pride flags.
They're amazing.
We love them. We took pictures. You'll see it. And it's stuff like this. You know, Mama Kim, she started listening and she was learning about the community. And I'm sure there are other mothers or fathers that are listening to the show just for those same reasons. And this is an outlet where you can find information like that. Gay Talk, that's what we're here for. And anyone in the Long Island...
sometimes we're crass and crazy.
Course, a lot of times we're crass and we're crazy. My mom says I swear too much. But mom, you weren't supposed to be listening to this. But these are, you know, we highly recommend looking into this. And people in the Long Island area, this can be a great thing for your son or daughter this upcoming summer.
Yeah.
No, and we get a little crazy and stuff. But we do it and it comes from a good place. And we just, you know, it's just us. When we're here together, we just lose it. So, but yeah, that's an amazing story, and that's awesome. Really, it is.
Speaking of things that are coming from a good place.
Uh-huh.
So, I want to talk about two things really quickly. Pope Francis, this is not confirmed or denied mm-hmm. that this happened, but Pope Francis tells a gay man that God made you like that and loves you like that. So, this gentleman's name, Juan Carlos Cruz, describing his encounter with the Pope, said, you know, the Pope said to him, you know, Juan Carlos, that does not matter. God made you like this. God loves you like this. The Pope loves you like this. And you should love yourself and not worry about what other people say. Now, this came out of a whole thing where Juan Carlos went to meet with him because of his experience. He was sexually assaulted in Chile by a Chilean bishop. And so what's interesting about this is after... So whether the Vatican will confirm or deny it... last Friday, after all of this happened with this individual, Pope Francis called an emergency 3-day summit at the Vatican to discuss Chile's sex abuse scandal. Mm-hmm. After this happened, 31 active bishops and 3 retired bishops announced in a statement that they had offered to resign over the scandal and place the issue, in quotations, in the hands of the Holy Father so that he might freely decide for each one of us. So again, this isn't confirmed or denied, but the fact that this Pope potentially said this is
it's huge.
It's huge because, you know, we know what the Catholic religion thinks of.
Trust me, I grew up with it. But you know, one of the things that I noticed about this man, he's very transformative in the way that he speaks and his actions. You know, like you've had popes before. We had Benedict the 50th, 100th.
He's also seeing things, you know, and he's having these conversations with people, and he, you know, the Catholic Church has done so much to help people, but now he's starting to see how much it's done to hurt people.
But also,
and that I think is making him push the issue, because these kids were being hurt.
He is, to me, I think he's the description of a pious man, in the sense that he lives by what he believes, and his actions prove that. As opposed to previous popes, unfortunately, you know, they did a lot to hide a lot of this craziness that was happening. You know, they actively sought to hide the truth. And you don't get that with this man. He wants the truth out there. He wants people to be held accountable. And he's not afraid to say it. Well, he's not afraid to go against...
Well, it needs to happen now.
Well, yeah, this is the man who doesn't sit on a golden throne. This is the man who washes the feet of the poor. This is the man who in the past has gone out and said, people need to take it easy on discriminating on gay people. Like, he's already spoken out on stuff like this. So, though not confirmed nor denied, something of this nature would not surprise me from the sitting pope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, it's a very powerful statement. I really hope it's true. I don't know if it will ever be confirmed or denied, but if that is the stance of the pope, I can see a potential huge shift within that religion. And
I hope so.
That would be amazing because it would probably bring a lot of people back.
Especially a lot of people in communities and our community that feel that they've been ostracized by the church, by the Roman Catholic Church for many, many, many decades. Yeah. So,
and that might be one of the reasons why he's doing it. I mean, I'm sure if we wait till tomorrow, Kellyanne Conway will come out and really give us the truth of everything.
Truth.
But...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Tommy Lauren.
Yeah, all of them. And Sarah can't fuckably stand her. We'll find it all out tomorrow.
Yeah, because they know everything.
Absolutely.
All right. So we've got two more things that we need to cover, and then we need to wrap this up.
But... I wanted to just call out something really quickly. There's a new documentary coming out. It's called Alone in the Game. And since the theme, I feel like, of this show today was homophobia, it's, I think, important to end on this. So this is a new documentary coming out, and it's amazing because what it's doing is it's focusing on out sport professionals telling their story and telling the world what it was like for them to love something so much and be pulled in two different directions because of who they were, and continue to do what they loved, but also hate themselves for who they were.
And we've seen a lot of activity with a lot of, athletes coming out within the past 5 years, mm-hmm. a lot. And I mean, it's been in the media before. We had basketball players come out, football players come out. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see these men really face their masculinity and say...
And women.
And say, you know, I'm sorry, but I am who I am. And I so happen to love this game, whichever game they play. And they just push forward with such a positive, amazing message for the community and for youngsters that are growing up in our community.
And the point of this documentary is to acknowledge the homophobia within the mass media sports world, right? But it's also to combat the homophobia, which is highly important, right? Because what if the next LeBron James is a gay man?
What if?
Yeah. Why would that be a horrible thing?
But, you know, we're also seeing team owners and a lot of leagues, like, for example, the NCAA, when they pulled out of South Carolina or North Carolina, when they passed the HB2 law, and they pulled funding and said, no, we're not going to do the game here if you do this. You know, so you are seeing a lot of, like, big name brands, like, going out of their way to really acknowledge the fact that we exist and we're not going anywhere and we need to be represented and we are important.
Everybody should feel like they can be represented.
And look at the U.S. Olympic team. And that was huge this year.
Well, mm-hmm. Hello, Adam Rippon. Hello.
Mm-hmm. And Gus Kenworthy. Hello. Uh-huh.
Hello.
But I think another really important thing about this is it addresses suicide too. Because, you know, no matter how old you are, no matter what situation you're in, high school, college, if this is your professional career, if you feel oppressed, if you feel like you're pulled in two different directions and you can't embrace who you are, that idea of suicide is going to literally just live on top of your brain.
Suicide is universal. Knows no age and knows no boundaries. Yeah. Anyone can.
It doesn't discriminate. Right?
It doesn't. So it's very important that we have these conversations. It's very important that companies and media companies take the time to actually do and produce shows like this.
And it's very important that professional sports teams embrace every single LGBT member on their team, not because they're gay, but because they're good at what they do.
Absolutely. I mean, being gay is just is who we are. Mm-hmm. Doing what we love is something completely different. Mm-hmm. You know, so there shouldn't be any correlation. I mean, obviously, there should be a correlation between the two, but that shouldn't be the reason why one would think or someone would actually think that someone is not good at something because they're gay. Mm-hmm.
So all this being said, Alone in the Game airs June 28th at 8 p.m. on AT&T's Audience Network. AT&T's Audience is a channel 239 on DirecTV and channel 1,114 on AT&T UVerse.
Who has that many channels?
It will also be available for streaming if you're in Washington, D.C., you can see it at the AFI Docs Festival on June 15th.
Amazing.
So check that out.
All right, so let's jump into our Gay Talk term and, of course, on this day in gay history. So I will kick it off to Trish again. Go for it, girl.
Hey, everybody. This week's Gay Talk term brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com.
Let me stop you there. What the hell was that? Hey, everybody.
I don't know. My voice is living its own life today.
All right.
That was a good segue, though, with kick it off, though, for this
one. Yeah, kick.
So this one, which we're going to change the idea of it, hopefully with this documentary, it's called Hero Candy. Hero Candy is a football player or some other sports idol who will allow homosexual fans to blow them.
So that's Trish on her knees waiting by the
that
locker
gay talk
room.
Term is outdated, and we hope to change it. But this week's gay talk term is Hero Candy.
Yes, right. Indeedy.
Hero Candy. All right, Christopher.
And of course, on this day in gay history, brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
There it is. Today, on May 21st, 2003, in Nepal, Kaysen Crane, a young gay man, summits Mount Everest as part of his Rainbow Summits program, which aims to raise awareness.
Project.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Damn it. You could have let me get through it. Excuse me. As part of his Rainbow Summits project, which aims to raise awareness for the Trevor Project, he has already climbed 5 of the 7 summits, the highest mountains on each continent, and would go on to climb Denali or Mount McKinley in Alaska later that year in 2013.
Let's just say Denali. That's the real name.
Denali or Mount McKinley.
No, Denali.
Or Mount McKinley.
No, all right, so that's Denali. your history.
You know how many people fought to get Denali back, and here we are again acknowledging white America, their supremacy over the land that they took off from our Indians and gone and put presidential names on everything or this name or that name, and they fought so hard to get Denali back, and he wants to sit here and acknowledge Mount McKinley. I love you, though.
I'm about to burn her soapbox. Let's close this out.
I just had to say that. But anyway, before we move on, I also wanted to, because we've already spoken about what it was and the Trevor Project, just throw out that phone number on there in case anybody needs it. The Trevor Lifeline is 866-488-7386. Now we can move on.
Okay.
All right. So I guess it's me.
That's you.
All right, guys, listen, if you love our show, make sure that you rate and review on your favorite podcasting service. This helps others know about the show. Also, it ensures that it becomes more visible within our podcasting community. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which is a service where you, our listener, can support our show with a pledge donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Christopher?
Yes. Next week, we welcome back to the show Bijan Clark. He's going to join us.
I'm excited.
Yes, it's going to be fun. He's going to join us not only for our now annual Memorial Day barbecue, but he's going to be back on the episode again. It'll be a lot of fun.
And he always brings that home brew.
Dish. Yeah. All about the dish. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and he always brings that home brew that he does, too. So.
And we might have another special guest coming. Who knows?
Wait, we should probably drink the ones that are in the fridge that he brought last time, then.
This bitch.
Anyway,
totally put us on the spot. Nick!
So, thank you to our guest, Hans Hershey, for joining us on today's episode. We know it was super early for you, but we always love having you here. His latest book, Returning to the Land of Morning Calm, is now available. The links to the book will be available on today's show notes.
Christopher?
Is it my turn again? Can we put a rubber on this, please?
Yes, please. We need one.
Alrighty. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you want to contact us, just head on over to the Contact Us tab at the top of your web browser, where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast, or an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a voice message with any questions you may have. We'll answer those for you on the show if you'd like. That phone number is 334-GAY-TALK, and if you need all the digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that web stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you so much, and y'all have a good night.
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.